This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
We are standing at the edge of something this country has never seen before. The Epstein files aren't just going to be debated anymore. They're going to be released. Entire vaults of documents. Names, maybe. We're still wondering about that part. Communications, patterns, timelines, the scaffolding of a predatory system that operated in plain sight across decades, countries, and institutions. And whether people realize it or not, this is going to have a massive psychological impact on millions of Americans. Survivors, families, whistleblowers, communities, people who trusted systems that protected Epstein, and people who trusted public figures whose names may now surface. This isn't just a legal moment, it's an emotional one, a destabilizing one, a vindicating one, and in some ways, a traumatic one. Because when you open a vault like this, you don't just expose wrongdoing. You expose the mechanisms that allowed it. You expose enablers. You expose the fragility of trust. You expose how predators manipulate power structures, institutions, and social vulnerabilities. So today, we're going deeper than headlines. We're going into the psychology, into the individual psychology, the institutional psychology, the national psychology of what happens when an entire country is forced to confront one of the darkest open secrets of our time. Joining us, psychotherapist and author Siobhan Scott, who spent many, many years studying human trauma, predators like this, institutional betrayal, and the psychological fallout of large-scale abuse networks. We're going to be digging into all of this topic as deep and dark as it is today. Siobhan, welcome. Let's start here. Why do moments like this create the feelings that they do in our society? Well, right now you have in some people adulation, you have relief, and some you have panic. It's a very weird feeling out there right now with folks all over the board, if you will.
Yeah, I think people are confused. Number one, it affects our core beliefs about who is our country and who runs our country, and the core beliefs about justice and, you know, are people safe? It's destabilizing, just, mm-hmm. you know, overall. People are shocked, or a lot of people are in denial saying it can't be true. But I think right now we really need to know what happened and deal with the difficult emotions that come with that, and then take action to get back on course.
What do you think we're in for here? We've been seeing bits and pieces dropped over, you know, over time in the last, you know, week or two. We've seen some pretty big chunks drop, but that's nothing compared to what, you know, they're saying are terabytes of information that will be released. That's a lot of information to get through in general, and then everybody's going to start digging, and I think we'll start seeing new headlines for quite some time as people dig deep into this. But what do you think we're about to see? Is this going to be like a national trauma of some sort? Do you think we're in for some massive names and people that were once beloved? Maybe that's going to change. What's your impression?
It's kind of ambiguous at this point, because mm-hmm. there has been some buzz that the material is now being scrubbed and altered. And so I hope that it's not. I hope that we get reality, because we really need that kind of transparency in order to be able to look at what changes do we make in mm-hmm. the way the system operates and how we view these elite people at the top who are capable of doing such terrible things.
Do you feel like there are a lot of women and even men out there that have had... who have been abused, let's put it that way, I'm just going to say that, that this is going to traumatize them. And the survivors who are in their periphery, it's going to traumatize them, that there's going to just be this national re-traumatization, if you will, that things that have happened in our past, now it's just, we're just being traumatized over and over, even though we need to know this. How do we get through this if we've been there before and now it's just, it's plastered all over TikTok, it's on Facebook, it's on Instagram, it's on the news, it's everywhere. We cannot avoid this.
Yeah. I think it'll be a mix of re-traumatization on one level, but also validation, because one of the key problems that survivors of abuse have is that they feel isolated, they feel tainted, they feel that somehow it's their fault. And when they learn that, you know what, this is common, this happens to a lot of people, I think it takes the lid off the box of things that they've been holding inside. And it can be difficult in the short term, but ultimately, I think it helps a lot of people. And people will go into therapy, they'll find survivor groups. And I can see that already happening because people are saying, you know, there are things that I've buried that I really want to deal with. So I hope overall it has a positive impact, even though people do need to dose it. Just like we do with all political news, which is so hostile and contentious, we can't be absorbed in it all the time. But I think with dosing it and taking the lid off the box of our own histories and then seeking support, I think it can turn out to be a good thing.
Do you think it's going to have the same effect like the Me Too movement? Do you think it's like phase two of that?
That's a really good point. That's a really good way to put it. I think so. Are we going to do a better job with questioning the elite and taking action more quickly when there are rumors, not going soft on them in the criminal justice system, not using politicians, you know, for favors? And I hope it helps us move in the right direction and do a better job of protecting kids.
I was wondering almost the exact same thing. So I was thinking of Me Too, Stacey, and I was thinking, it started with accusations against a few people and then it had a collective effect. There was this, all different cases that are completely unrelated to one another. People started talking. I'm wondering if we're going to see this again, if we're going to see that coming out of individuals having the confidence to do so because of the collective revealing of people like this right now.
There's power in numbers.
Yeah, if we're going to see that take place, what's your thoughts on something like that happening again? You know, either, you know, that was a pretty big movement in the first round, but I'm wondering, are we going to see something just as big, if not bigger?
I think so, because as much as this kind of crime against children has not been talked about, mm-hmm. there's a lot of it. And yeah. it goes on at all levels of society, as we're seeing. And one of the most healing things for people who have been victims is to be in a group and to sense that camaraderie and the fellowship that they feel. And that helps so much with the stigma that they've carried and the self-blame. So I hope it goes in that direction.
It's going to be very fascinating to see where that all falls. The perpetrators, if their names are revealed, which will be interesting because, yeah, we're all seeing and kind of holding our breath if they're going to scrub it for national security purposes. Mm-hmm. I think the folks out there that have something to be concerned about are probably fairly concerned. But what about the survivors themselves as well? When this comes out, if they are named in this or even if they're not, having pieces of their life, chapters of their life thrown out there to the public, and it, not that it's their fault by any means, but people do hold shame. People hold moments that they're not happy about because it was traumatizing for them. And now it's all out in the open, or will be all out in the open. Let's talk about that angle for a little bit and what they're going to be going through. Yes, it is great that these people hopefully will be exposed, but at the same point, there's a lot of folks out there who are also going to have elements of their life that, if they're still around, you know, wanted to be, you know, put away, and it's going to be right back to the surface for everyone to be discussing.
Mm-hmm. And that's the hard part, you know, for many victims, they're not as concerned about their anonymity. But those are the names that I think should be scrubbed, certainly yeah. from any public exposure, just as we, you know, when kids are molested or assaulted in the home, we publish the names of the perpetrators, but not the victims. And mm-hmm. they should be the ones to have control. Some of them do want to come out and tell their story, just as Virginia Giuffre has done. Mm-hmm. And that can be very healing for them to feel like, you know what, I don't need to carry the shame here. But it certainly will throw a lot of people back into symptoms of their chronic PTSD. And that's something, you know, again, do we have enough therapists to be available to support people through that? I hope so.
Yeah.
comment from Gen Z 367. I also think in regards to people being ashamed of coming forward, there may be some that suppressed everything. And this is now bringing up a lot of that that was pushed down. So a lot of PTSD, which is what you just mentioned, Siobhan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Why do you think it is that the Epstein case activates such a strong emotional response nationally, where it, obviously in the big scale of things, this is, you know, a certain number of people who were involved and certainly affected. But compared to obviously the whole population, I mean, there's not a lot of people who have exact personal ties to this, but there, is it the relatability? Is it because even if you weren't directly affected by Jeffrey Epstein, the behavior like this is reminiscent of other individuals in people's lives?
Definitely, definitely. It brings up their own experiences with, and it may not even be the sexual component of it, but you know, people who have been abused in various ways and the power imbalance, that's also triggering and can set off responses. And I think for the culture as a whole, when you hear about all the way to the top, the highest level of political involvement that's been alleged here, it really shakes people's ability to trust the system and to trust mm-hmm. that people in the government are, you know, working in our favor if they will abuse children in this way.
Well, and how? What kind of a culture do we have where we doubt our victims? We doubt when somebody says this happened to me. And I've heard from surprisingly a lot of women who are doubting these victims. And I just kind of do a double take, like, really? Really? Mm-hmm. Do you think somebody is going to talk about something so traumatic and horrific and make it up? And yes, there are those that will fabricate something like this. But for the majority, I really believe that these people are telling the truth. So it's mm-hmm. really disheartening to hear, especially women, placing blame and not believing these victims. It's mm-hmm. it makes it scarier for anybody to come out in the future.
It definitely does. And that's a problem we've had in this country forever. Well, probably everywhere in the world, is the tendency to blame the victim. On some level, it makes people feel safer that, well, I'm not the kind of person that this would happen to, so I don't need to worry about it. So all these other women, they've done something, or young girls, mm-hmm. they've done something to cause this. I mean, I've worked with pedophiles in the past who talked about, well, this was a very seductive, my daughter was a very seductive 6-year-old. And it just goes with this kind of predatory thinking that the victim's poor judgment, or if she hadn't been drinking, or if he hadn't have put himself in that crowd at that party, you know, this wouldn't have happened. And it makes people feel safer that they're, you know, not that kind of person, so it's not going to happen to them. The other thing that I think we're running into now, because the country has been so divided into political tribes, and when they hear that their hero is implicated in some way, they immediately go into denial and attacking the victim that's making the allegations.
But we've seen our heroes fall before, haven't we?
Yeah.
I would think so. But I don't know if it's to this degree when you're taking it as high as this goes.
And that's what I wonder about is how... Are, even when this all comes out, are people going to believe it? If it implicates people that they don't want to believe could be monstrous. I mean, it's not a secret that, you know, some of these people that are out there, I can think of many on both sides, you know, of both political leanings, that the answer is probably yes, very monstrous. And if information comes out about them, not going to be shocked by it. Mm-hmm. But you're still going to have people that are going to sit there and pretend that that's just not true. It can't be, because it challenges their worldview to such an extent that they're not gonna process it. I mean, and let me ask you, when somebody is like that, are they choosing that? Are they choosing not to accept those sort of things, or is it kind of one of those they're not capable of doing this? It's just their brain is not going to process it. Like, some folks don't have empathy, or some just not capable of really being able to process things certain ways without utter total mental breakdown.
Yeah, I think there's probably more of the second, that their denial is just so intense, because in order to acknowledge that their fearless leader, their hero, is a sexual predator, that would shake their identity, because mm-hmm. they're seeing that this as an example, their person was sent by God. And there mm-hmm. are a lot of people who believe that about one specific person at the top, that he is sent by God. And I think video could show up of that person doing something with a child, something vividly violent or sexual, and folks would still see it and say, this is a scam. This is, you know, a conspiracy. This never happened. This is AI. And so there's a certain percentage of people that are simply not going to accept it. And I do think that's a defense mechanism. It would shatter their world to see the truth.
Bending the rules of reality is really what it is. We're talking with Siobhan Scott about the Epstein, the cover-up, and now the release of the files as they will be released now. We'll see as to what extent in the coming days, weeks, months. Who knows how long it's going to take for all this. I don't anticipate a fast drop, but who knows? Anything is possible. Bending the rules of reality seem to be what a lot of people are doing right now in the lead up to this. We've heard a lot of discussions, people talking about, especially when it gets political, and I'm not going political here at all, because I don't care what side you're on. If you're a horrible person, you've done this shit, you need to burn. And that's it. There's nothing political about this. I'm not more excited when I hear a member of this party might be on it, or a member of that party. It's like, okay, great. Mm-hmm. Bring them all up. Take them down. But we're starting to see a lot of rationalizing of weird things right now. And I don't know what to make of it. And I don't know that it's all being done intentionally. I want to bring up what was said last week, and she's getting a lot of kickback for it, Megyn Kelly. When she was talking about some of her knowledge of the case from a source that she has, but doubling down on, there's a big difference. And if anybody has not seen the clip, go watch the whole clip. Doubling down on, there's a big difference between a 5-year-old and a 15-year-old when it comes to predatory behavior towards a child, and not just, you know, is a 5-year-old, does they look different? And of course, that's, who would even ask the question? It's like, is the sky blue? Yes, one is older than the other. But neither, it doesn't make a damn bit of difference, I would think, to most people, if there is a predator that's trying to have a sexual relationship with the 5 or the 15-year-old. Same amount of wrong right there. Mm-hmm. Wrong, no, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. But it seemed, and this is how I took it, this is how a lot of people took it, it seemed that there was some rationalizing going on when we hit at a certain age, around 15-ish, of like, well, it's predatory, but it's diet predatory. You know, it's predatory light. Like, no, there is no predatory light.
That's what is going on here, and why are we seeing people try to bend these things right now, of all times, on this? Why? What the hell is going on where people are trying to rationalize things like this?
I think on some level it's back to I don't want my guy or my team to go down, and therefore they're coming up with anything they can to make it sound like it's not that bad. And in truth, a pedophile is someone who's sexually attracted to pre-puberty children. Uh-huh. A hebephile is a person who's attracted to post-puberty children, because they're still children at 13, 14, 15. But that's a particular kind of paraphilia where this is the individual's primary sexual attraction. It is still wrong. It is still an incredible power imbalance. A 13, 14, 15-year-old is not capable of giving informed consent. Right. And it's terrifying to hear somebody go on national television and try to say, well, it's not pedophilia, so it's okay. And sure, you can break it into hebephilia. That's still a crime. It's still wrong. It's still pathological.
I want to say that's the first time I've heard that term.
Yeah. And she wasn't arguing the terms. You know, it was that was what kind of got me about it. I mean, it wasn't like, well, that's technically this. I mean, of course, we can. Okay, well, that is technically this and that. I get that. But it's the normalization. It's the rationalization of it. And that's where I'm. And I don't know. I mean, the other thing that was coming to mind in no way, shape or form, I don't know anything about her, and I don't know what her past is, and I don't know her history is, and I'm not saying this at all, but could there be leakage sometimes when people are rationalizing things like this because of their own traumas of what they've gone through, that people try, no matter what, you know, to be healthy, hopefully, and that they've moved on from things and they've healed in certain ways, but that healing looks different for every single person. I'm wondering sometimes when you have people doing those sort of weird rationalizations of, well, you know, I had it hard too in really weird ways like this, is some of that leaking over sometimes? And I don't know specifically here, but when I'm speaking more in general terms with people rationalizing stuff.
It sure could be that. It could also be that they grew up in one of the states that still legalizes child marriage. There's a big movement now. I have friends who are a part of it, to basically say, if you're under 18, it doesn't matter what the circumstances are, you can't get married. And there are states, I believe Utah was one, where girls as young as 13 could be married and have a marriage license. And so there are probably people from these kind of subcultures who look at it differently, who don't understand the developmental damage that this does to kids. And because it's in my book, it's open. I was married at 16 and I was groomed at 15 and I went along with it. And at the time, I thought I was an adult. I look back at those wedding pictures now and I'm a baby-faced kid. I was a child. But the person in that situation just doesn't realize it. And the pastor validated the marriage, even though the man was 25. And this was clearly not psychologically healthy. And I was a needy kid. And there were so many things about this courtship that should have been red flags to my parents, you know, that people still in this day and time just don't get it.
We've got a comment. Is it Sir Thriver? It says, why knock Megan? She didn't say it's okay. She said it's not pedophilia, just as your guest is saying. What do we say to that? What's our thought?
I'm not knocking Megan Kelly. I'm pointing out the statement that she made twice.
Correct.
In a row. I'm not knocking her. I am pointing it out and I'm saying this seems like someone, it's normalizing something that's not normal.
Right.
And if that's not what her intent was, then I think she should walk it back and say, look, I misspoke. It came out and I'll believe her. I don't think she's, you know, pro pedophilia or anything like that. But our words matter. And if it means nothing and it was a misspeaking, then it's a misspeaking. Okay.
But it's been, a week?
But
week and
it's
2
been
days
more than
now?
A week. It's been, it was doubled down on. It was just, I was weird. It was weird.
It felt
and
icky.
A 15-year-old is not okay. So I don't, anybody who's, you know, why are you knocking? I'm not knocking. It's not normal. And it's okay to point that out. Mm-hmm. And we need to point that shit out.
Thank you for
not saying she's
that.
A horrible person, not saying, just saying that's not an okay thing to say. So walk it back. That's mm-hmm. all.
Thanks, Tony.
Yeah. So it's weird. It's weird seeing the rationalizing and the place that we've gotten into in this country on this topic and where it's heading. What else do we have in the comments right now?
Let's see. Gen Z 367 says, I'm wondering what hold Epstein had on the people that were invited to his home with the young girls. If those people got there and then realized this is wrong and had a really bad situation, what were the consequences for that person with Epstein? I think Robin had covered that they just by walking into those situations, now they were under the thumb. There was no mm-hmm. way for them to back out and control was had at this yeah. point. So it turns into a whole power struggle that once you walk into these situations, you can't get out of it. Now you are guilty. You are there. You are part of this. They're recording it. They've got evidence that you're there. You're screwed. So
I want to talk more, Siobhan, about, you know, your experience too. And this is her book, Nightbird. It's out right now, wherever you get books, and goes into your experiences, you know, in great detail of being, you know, at that age, because what people are so coldly, the way they're looking at so many of the survivors and the victims, and you hear, well, you know, she all the excuses, she should have done this, she should have done that, she should have been this, she should have been that, and it's you know, a lot of blaming them for being in the scenarios that they're in, but when you're in that sort of an environment where everyone around you is saying this is normal and they're older than you and they're adults and they're the people that, you know, should be you know, hopefully having your best interest at heart. It's nearly impossible to see mm-hmm. how strange things may be unless you get out of that cage, especially when religiosity is mixed into mm-hmm. it mm-hmm. as well. Can you speak to that at all?
Yeah. Somebody who reviewed my book recently used a term that I thought was very apt, and it certainly fits for these girls. And Virginia Giuffre went into yeah. it in great detail in her most excellent book. Affectionately dehydrated. And I think when you come from a childhood, whether you have that kind of abuse or not that she experienced, I did not as a kid, but when you don't feel loved and you don't feel cared for and people really aren't connected to you and supportive of you, you grow up as a young person desperate for that sip of water, right? You're mm-hmm. dehydrated, and somebody comes along and pays you attention. And even if they're using you or abusing you, that attention is overwhelmingly wonderful. And you become very trauma bonded to them. You develop loyalty toward them. You feel like they love you. You feel like you love them. And you don't realize that you deserve better than what's happening to you. You don't have a radar for, you know, this is wrong. I need to get out of this. They don't realize it. And this may be for many the first time that they feel cared for. And it's you know, the way that a deprived child has this sense of self that they're not worth more. And then they get attention. If they're getting attention for their sexuality, for their bodies, they just feel like, well, that's what I'm worth. And that's what's there for. And then in my case, you combine the religiosity with this is what God wants. And you're, you know, you've been raised to follow the Bible and this is what God wants. And I'm told that God has given messages and the pastor is supportive of this. That's another layer to it.
Yeah.
So you're feeling in your gut that this isn't right, but there's nothing you can do about it because your environment says this is exactly as it should be.
And I think for me and for many of them, they don't even have that radar in their gut that says this isn't right. What they're mm-hmm. experiencing in their gut is, this is the first time I felt important. This is the first time I felt valued. And so it feels very wrong. And I always tell people, the advice, listen to your gut, is sometimes good, but sometimes your gut can leave you astray depending on how your gut developed.
Interesting.
What we've been seeing with this, and when we've been seeing with various people telling their stories, saying that they've been victims of Epstein, one of the big questions that people are asking is, why don't these individuals name the perpetrators, especially if we're going to see them blocked out? And obviously there's legal reasons for that, because they'd like to not, you know, go bankrupt, and be sued 800 ways to Tuesday because this is a very hard thing to prove. This is a very hard thing to document. And the other question, the other thought I had on that is, do they know they're perpetrators? If you're on Epstein Island or wherever you were, they weren't all there. They were in his homes. They were all over the place. I do wonder, you know, a lot of these, you know, young women, did they even know who some of these people were if they were coming and going? Obviously, Virginia Giuffre did know some of them. But, you know, some, I do wonder if the scale as to which it appears he was running this thing, if there's just so many people that came that, you know, they weren't celebrities, they weren't of note, they had money and they had power. But unless you're a celebrity and you're a 15-year-old girl, you're probably not going to know who the people, every person is.
Yeah, 100%. I think both of those things are true. They've probably been advised for legal reasons to not start name dropping at this point. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what all the consequences for that could be, but certainly, yeah, having a lawsuit against you could be very scary. And then, yeah, being in that situation where it's one man after another, multiple men, and they don't know who these people are, certainly very likely for some of them.
An interesting comment that just came in. Jacqueline said, I was groomed and molested as a minor. I have never had a long-lasting and fully healthy relationship. I'm in my 40s. No matter how hard I try to, with the knowledge that I don't need to correct my past. This is a lifelong journey for these people. This mm-hmm. is never going to go away. This, mm-hmm. My heart goes out to people dealing with this. And a lot of them are in our chat section right now. Mm-hmm. These are people who have dealt with this, who've been around this. It's coming to the forefront now. It really is. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, the thing that's good about this is, if they feel, you know what, I'm not the only one. I'm not alone here. And as I tell everybody that I've met who has this kind of history, hold hope. Healing happens. It's not linear. It's not quick. It can take a lifetime to unpack all of it. But I think every decade, people show a lot of improvement and a lot of growth. And I mean, it doesn't mean it takes a decade for change to happen. But it's developmental in nature. As we get older, we get more insight. We are able to do a better job with putting it in perspective, forgiving ourselves for errors in judgment that we had because we were young and we didn't know better. And it's something I think that most people can eventually gain a sense of peace and healing and come to a place where they no longer feel tainted by it. But it definitely affects our core being. It's not an easy path.
I'm going to imagine when this comes out, and if there's names that are in there that we haven't heard yet, predators, you know, they're not always, I guess, going to the same source for what they're getting. This is examining one of those sources. This is examining the Epstein area of where these predators got what they were looking for through him. I'm going to guess this is going to expose a lot of other networks too, that there's going to be other people who are going to, you know, suddenly, you know, okay, well, they're getting this over here. Where else are they getting it as they travel in their packs? Where else are they finding this type of material, these type of people that are willing to and are
you know, in operation of things like this, of networks. I would imagine that there's a lot of collateral damage beyond Jeffrey Epstein that we're about to see when these massive terabytes of data come out. Do you agree?
I hope so. I hope that we can have the blinders off as a culture, as a country, that we need to protect children, boys and girls, and we can't validate people who are exploitive, who are predators. And we need to, everybody needs to talk. Everybody needs to open up about what they know when particularly these powerful people are involved and people cover it up for them, because it's all the enablers who are at fault as well.
And I think it's important too, to look at it and because what we're going to, I think we're going to see people and we're going to see accounts of people when they were younger. And we're, some of these people are going to be old men now.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to remember old men are still just as dangerous as the younger man. We see it in so many cases where creepy predator who's 70 something, who's 80 something, preying on kids, they still do it. So I think we're going to have to resist that urge a little bit too, of like, oh, well, they're old.
It's just grandpa. It's just grandpa.
And, yeah. Yeah.
And here's a weird thought for you. It happens in nursing homes with elderly people, where women in nursing homes who have dementia are sexually victimized by other old men in the nursing home. And those cases are rather horrifying. How would you like knowing grandma's being assaulted every night in her nursing home? I mean, yeah, old people who are predators are still predators.
It's something that doesn't change in people. If that's what you are, that's what you are. That's why I wish we could just eliminate them. But we don't. And they will prey until the day they die. It's going to be very fascinating. Siobhan Scott, thank you for being on and talking about this as we're on the verge of all this coming out. Nightbird is her book. You can get it wherever books are sold. It's her memoir and very worth a read. All right. Until next time, for Todd, for Stacy, for Siobhan, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.